I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back. George Norrie with you along with Robert Farrell, the science behind alien encounters. Robert, what do you think our religious people will do if and when governments start to disclose about the UFO existence? Well, how do you think they're going to tell us, the flock?
Well, my experience when I talk to people who are very religious is they think it's the work of the devil. And my fear is that when the disclosure occurs and the UFOs land on the White House lawn, I think it won't be good for some of the groups of religions where in the past some groups have actually committed suicide.
Oh, gee. Yeah, no, that's true. They have.
Yeah, and in fact, that's why I think I'm doing what I'm doing and out there trying to prepare people so it's not a shock, so that they don't jump off the cliff. And one of the only group that I know of religiously that's actively been trying to prepare its flock is the Catholic Church. Monsignor Balducci, the late Monsignor Balducci, I think was on a mission to do just that. He was on Rome Radio a number of times talking about the possibility that there's other life out there, that they're humans. And then in 2005, I saw him speak at the Disclosure Conference outside of Washington. And again, he was the keynote speaker. So I think the Catholic Church is trying to prepare people for that. The other ones, I don't know. And I think they need to step in and really start explaining, you know, the fact that there's other life on other planets is not excluded by the Bible, and we just need to take a different interpretation, perhaps, of what's written in the Bible. Because otherwise, I think for some groups, it will be quite a shock, and we have to prepare them for that. That's what I've been doing, I think, for a number of years now.
Well, what the Catholic Church started doing, too, is they were telling people the belief in extraterrestrial life does not negate one's belief in God. They were kind of like paving the way that there's something coming.
That's right. Exactly.
Now, you have talked about the gravitational fields and the propulsion systems and how these UFOs are. How did you come to this understanding?
Well, you know, when you're trying to analyze something, you get all the data you can, you lay it out. And as I pointed out earlier, I didn't have the ability to actually put my hands on a crashed UFO. But the evidence that's out there, and there's a lot of it, is the testimony of people who've seen them do things. And so what I did is I just wrote down all the things that they can do. For instance, high G maneuvers is top of the list. They've been seen doing right angle turns. They can do supersonic speed without producing a shockwave. They can even travel through water at very high speed. When they're around metallic objects, sometimes they move them, you know, like in the Close Encounter of the Third Kind, if you recall, the mailboxes started moving. They can do that.
Mm-hmm.
They can change color. And there's a whole list of things that they can do, and I wrote out that list, and I said, well, now, what's the best hypothesis for this? And gravity, being able to produce a gravitational field solves all of that.
Now, did they have to have some kind of special apparatus within the craft to be able to do this? Or are they tapping into something else?
No, I think they actually do this. According to Einstein's general field theory, there's a possibility that there's an interaction between electric fields, magnetic fields, and gravitational fields. And throughout our history and technology, we've been playing around with the connection between electric and magnetic fields. And just recently now, the last couple decades, people have been playing around with the connection between electric and gravitational fields and also magnetic and gravitational fields. And the theory says that there should be a possibility of creating a gravitational field by manipulating electromagnetic fields. And in fact, the fact that light, which is an electromagnetic field, is bent when it passes through a gravitational field, and that it's called gravitational lensing. And astronomers use that all the time. So my reasoning is if gravity can affect electromagnetic fields, then why can't you do the reverse? And so I believe they are creating a gravitational field by manipulating either electric or magnetic or both fields to actually create a gravitational field. And in fact, I believe it's a negative field, which is something we don't have too much experience with. But some of the witness testimony on what they've seen these things do would say that it's probably a negative field. For instance, there's a photograph I've seen where a UFO is just taking off. It's about one diameter off the ground, and mm-hmm. It's picking up dust. And it's very easy to see a clear spot underneath the craft. And so if you visualize that there's a negative field pushing the craft up, at the same time, it's pushing everything else down. It's expelling air underneath it, causing a low-pressure region, and expelling the dust. So that's kind of an indication there's a negative field under the craft. There's also an incident, at least once, where people have come across an area, a shallow pond, where they had just seen a UFO hovering, and the pond is frozen. And it happens to be it's not freezing weather, you know, it's normal weather. So how did it freeze the pond? Well, again, if you have a negative field under the craft as it hovers, it will expel air, in other words, create a low pressure zone under the craft. And if you expose a water to low pressure, it starts evaporating very fast, maybe even boiling. And as those molecules are leaving the pond, they're taking energy with them, and so the rest of the pond is getting colder and colder and colder, and eventually it freezes. So those are some of the things that point to the fact that they actually are using a negative field. Another example would be how they can go supersonic speeds without creating a shock. So we can't do that because we rely on the pressure that's building up in front of the craft when we fly through the air. The faster we go, the higher the pressure. And I think of that, it's kind of like a signal up ahead for the molecules to get out of the way. We're coming. But that can only work up to the speed of sound. And at that point, you can't warn them, and they crash into you, and you get the shockwave. Well, if you could warn them by some other methods, like a negative field, it's not limited to the speed of sound, these molecules can start getting out of the way sooner, and you don't have a shockwave. And in fact, that same principle can be used if you decide you want to dive into the water. Well, you just jump into the water. You know, you bring your craft into the water, and it expels the water around you. So you can travel underwater just as easily as you can travel in the air. So this is all evidence for a negative field. And the evidence for gravity field in general is the fact that they can do high G maneuvers that would kill people.
Oh, yeah. Anything. There's no way a human being could handle that.
Right. But if you have a gravitational field propulsion, there's a lot of benefits to that, one of which is not only is the craft being accelerated, but everything in it is accelerating. In my lecture, I give a thought experiment, you might say, and I have a volunteer from the audience agree to go into this nose cone of a B-2 rocket, and I give him a cell phone, and I light the fuse, and off they go. So we're talking back and forth. And I say, well, now, how's it going? And they say, well, I'm being held down on my couch by 4 Gs. My G meter says it's 4 Gs. So I'm watching, and all of a sudden the flame sputters out, but the rocket keeps coasting upward. And I ask them, well, now what's happening? And they say, well, my G meter says 0 Gs, and I'm tending to float in my cockpit. And I'm watching, and now the craft is falling. And I call back, and I say, what's happening now? Oh, nothing's changed. I'm still floating in the cabinet, and the G meter says 0. I said, well, no, actually, you're accelerating at 1 G, and if we did this experiment on Jupiter, you'd be accelerating at 40 Gs, but you're free-falling. So if you have gravity field propulsion, one of the big advantages is you can accelerate at any rate you want because you simply free-fall either into that field or, in the case of a negative field, you free-fall away from it. So that's just one of the advantages of that. The other is, with field propulsion, you don't have to carry thousands and thousands of pounds of fuel that you can throw out the back end to create thrust. You don't need that. You don't need that at all. Just you and the craft that need to be accelerated. And you can go on and on and on for hours and hours and hours. You don't ever run out of fuel. So if you want to get out of the solar system, you're not going to do it with chemical rockets. You got to have gravitational field propulsion. In being able to accelerate at high Gs for an extended period of time, 100 Gs, 1,000 Gs, whatever you want, will allow you to get up to very high velocities very quickly. And as you approach the speed of light, of course, you get time dilation. So if you wanted to go to the nearest star, which is 4 light years away, and you accelerate fast enough, you might, according to the calendar on your craft, might say, well, this only took a day. And so you take a look. There's the star. Yeah, that's great. Let's go home. So you turn around and go back home. Well, that was only 2 days. When you land, the whole world is 8 years ahead of you. You just did time travel.
Interesting take. Now, I had a call during Open Lines last Friday, Robert, from someone who asked an interesting question. And he said, if these UFOs don't really want to be known or seen, why are they always lit up? How do you answer that?
Yes, well, that all is a function of how they are creating the gravitational field. A friend of mine, he's passed away, unfortunately, but he and a colleague presented a peer-reviewed paper at a propulsion conference at a multi-discipline like AIAA, Aeronautical Institutes. But it was a peer-reviewed paper and by a number of group of engineering people. Okay, I'm an engineer, so engineers are okay. But anyway, what they were proposing is that if you were to beam a high-frequency electromagnetic wave between two parallel plates that are highly reflective, and if you could have the right frequency or the right wavelength, as these photons are bouncing back and forth, when they strike the surface, they actually get converted into, if you're talking particle theory, they'd be converted into gravitons. And so you begin radiating gravitons, which actually propel you to space. That's how you get your propulsion, your field propulsion. It's gravitons that were created by beaming this electromagnetic energy between parallel plates. However, it's not 100% efficient. And so if your craft is just hovering, you don't have a lot of waste energy because the waste energy is released in the form of infrared in one case, but the craft actually starts glowing. And if it's hovering, it's hardly glowing at all. But when it decides to accelerate, now it's really kicking in the juice there, and it starts glowing brighter and brighter because it's accelerating. So that's just a fact that the process they're using to create the gravitational fields is not 100% efficient. There is some waste energy that is expelled in the form of light. And the faster they're accelerating, the brighter the light.
Why aren't they interacting with us, though?
well, for one thing, would you, if you were out there
no.
and observing us for thousands of years and saw us annihilate 60 million people, would you do that? Probably not. That's a good reason. but there's a couple other reasons. One is that...
Well, what do they want then, Robert? If they're not interacting with us, what do they want, in your opinion?
I think they're overseeing the planet. You know, maybe they would assign this as a project.
Well, if Sitchin was correct and they seeded us, then we're basically yes. their offspring, right?
Well, I believe he's right. There's a lot of evidence for that we are genetically attached to whatever aliens, Anunnaki in this case, that created us. But so they would have a reason, maybe, because they have an interest in us. Maybe they love us. And some people call them the Watchers. And so they're watching over the planet. And in my science fiction book, there's a conversation between a human and an alien. It's the alien saying, well, you know, we've watched, first of all, aliens can live as long as they want. So a 1,000-year project is nothing for them. So they're watching over the Earth. And so the human says, well, didn't that disturb you when you saw us have a war? And the alien said, well, you know, it did. But we kind of have a directive not to interfere in whenever we come across the planet that has a developing life form, we're not supposed to interfere. They just have to work it out. It's like parents when their kids are fighting. They have two kids that are fighting. You kind of have to let them work it out. And so that's as much as it hurts them to see that, I think, they just felt that they had to be hands-off.
Well, yeah, but as a parent, you step in.
At some point, you step in, and I think that's where we are now. I think when we set off the first nuclear bomb, that raised somebody's interest in, hey, wait a second. They're reaching a point where not only could they destroy each other, but they can destroy the whole planet, and we can't let that happen. And as you are aware, and your audience, I'm sure, is aware of the number of incidents in which UFOs have appeared over
missile silos. Yeah. Oh, they've shut them down. Sure.
Or just shut them down. Yeah, exactly. So they don't want us to play with the nuclear weapons. That's quite clear.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.